kids and violent crime, it's happening more and more often. Now at 7, our conversation with the district attorney about what could be behind the trend.
The Durham School Board having a special session after a week of employee protests. Why the superintendent's job status is up in the air.
Get ready for a break from the winter chill. I'm counting down the hours to a major warm-up and how long it will last.
Then Category 6 hurricanes aren't a reality yet, but a new study says they should be. Our meteorologists weigh in as we go in depth. Raleigh police are investigating yet another murder involving a teenager, but not as a victim, as a suspect. Thanks for joining us. I'm Ashley Rowe.
And I'm Dan Haggerty. Five people have been murdered in Raleigh so far this year. Police say teenagers were responsible for two of them. The most recent happened on Monday. This was the scene. This was a scene here. This was Poole Road.
Mm-hmm. Now a 14-year-old is accused of murder. WRAL's Matt Tallhelm talked with a district attorney and an activist about why kids continue to be involved in violent crime.
We are working to learn more about that 14-year-old suspect and what led up to the shooting. The district attorney here tells me she can't comment much because of the suspect's age. She says they are reviewing the evidence in this case right now.
Unfortunately, we have seen a real increase in very violent crime from juveniles.
Wake County District Attorney Lauren Freeman says her office is now handling 12 homicide cases with a juvenile as a suspect in just the last year and a half.
There is a proliferation of weapons, of guns on the streets, and I think the common theme that we see over and over again in these cases is the easy access to weapons.
The latest involves a 14-year-old accused of shooting and killing a man Monday afternoon on Poole Road in Raleigh. The teen is charged with murder on a juvenile petition. 24-year-old Amari Goss died at the hospital from his wounds.
The family is hurting.
Diana Powell works in the Raleigh community to end the violence that's putting more kids into the justice system.
It's disturbing. And we have to sound the alarm.
Just the last few months create a timeline of teenagers involved in violent crimes. A month ago, a juvenile was charged in connection with this homicide on Cumberland Creek Road in Raleigh. In November, a 14-year-old was charged with murder on a juvenile petition in connection with the stabbing death of another student during this fight at Southeast Raleigh High School. In July, police say a 17-year-old shot three people at a home on Orchard Hollow Lane, killing a woman. Powell is calling for the community to come together now and put more resources toward getting at the root of the violence.
What is happening in the home? Where are the parents? Are the parents aware? Or is it that we're so focused on trying to keep a roof over our heads?
Matt Tallhelm, WRAL News, Raleigh.
A balloon release is scheduled for tomorrow evening to honor Amari Goss, who was killed in Monday's shooting on Poole Road. Police tell us the investigation is ongoing.
So right now, the Durham Public School Board is working on what's next to resolve this pay dispute that's caused so many problems there for the past few weeks. They've been in a closed session for about the last hour. Now, the school board will be discussing what they're saying is a personnel matter. They haven't gone into too much detail. We're unsure what the results will be, of course, or if there will be anything made public tonight. Right now, there are questions, though, about the future of the superintendent's employment status. Many employees there and DPS families are frustrated with the school system with how they've been handling this pay issue for classified staff. They've held protests, of course, that you see here, and walkouts trying to put pressure on DPS to quickly come up with a solution. They also want leaders to be held accountable for the error, including the superintendent. But there are other groups that don't think he should be the person to be in trouble here. They're speaking out against that idea.
Firing a superintendent who has a solid record for improving the school system does not address, nor does it fix, the current problem. We are here today to ask, what is the rush?
The board will also meet tomorrow again, where we expect them to discuss solutions to addressing the overall pay issue.
Taking a live look now from the WRAL Tower Cam, you know it's going to be another freezing cold night. Meteorologist Kat Campbell is in the WRAL Severe Weather Center. Kat, you're saying that we could even dip below freezing tonight.
Absolutely. And, you know, you're going to need your jacket again as you head outside tomorrow morning, 29 degrees. But we get a break from the freezing temperatures after tonight. Let that carry you through. The next freezing morning after tonight won't be until next Thursday. So we'll at least get a little bit of a break. And you'll go from jackets likely to T-shirts by the weekend. Tonight's lows town by town get down to 24 in Roxborough, 28 degrees in Durham, Rocky Mount, 29 for Raleigh and Fayetteville, and 28 degrees in Southern Pines. At the bus stop in the morning, temperatures are going to be in the low to mid 30s. It's mostly sunny to start the day. Our south wind kicks in during the day tomorrow, though, and that leads to some milder temperatures. By the time the kids are heading home, we're up to 60 for the high tomorrow, and the warming trend will continue as this ridge of high pressure builds east. I'll have a closer look at the warm-up for the weekend coming up.
Well, at least the jackets can come off in the afternoon tomorrow. Thanks, Kat.
Flags flying at half staff in Harnett County today, honoring Deputy Chris Johnson. He died yesterday after his vehicle crossed the center line and hit a tractor trailer. WREL's Julian Grace heard from police who knew Deputy Johnson as a role model for students, a husband, and a father.
As you walk through the halls here at the Harnett County Sheriff's Office, it becomes clear that the deputies here are mourning the loss of a colleague and a friend. It's been a busy day inside the Harnett County Sheriff's Office.
I was sending a message out to all the employees here. Tell them, you know, during this time, how proud I am of them, the professionalism they showed yesterday.
Yesterday was a devastating day for this department. This after Harnett County Deputy Chris Johnson's Dodge Charger crossed the center line, colliding with a tractor trailer near NC Highway 210. The impact caused Johnson's patrol car to spin and collide with the car behind the tractor trailer, and he would not survive.
They protect us, right? And whenever they pass, hey, it hurts bad. It's like family.
Harnett County Deputy Johnson was a 25-plus year law enforcement veteran. But more importantly, he was a husband and a dad to four children who enjoyed working as an SRO.
The kids out at Highland Middle School where he was at, the school superintendent called me today and said the kids out there were having a hard time.
We kept our interview short with Sheriff Coates this afternoon because he had more pressing matters on his agenda.
What are you about to go do right now?
I'm going to see the family.
We're learning no charges will be filed in the crash, and so far no details have been released about services. Reporting in Harnett County, Julian Grace, WRAL News.
Just so terribly sad, a large community missing him tonight. An Ohio man is charged with threatening to kill North Carolina Senator Todd Johnson, who represents Union and Cabarrus counties. 38-year-old Nicholas Daniels was arrested yesterday. Authorities say he wrote Johnson on Facebook Messenger saying he was going to kill him, his wife, and children. Daniels appeared in court today and denied those accusations, stating his Facebook was hacked. He remains in the Wake County Jail under a $100,000 bond. The mayor of Sharpsburg has been arrested for his third DWI since being elected in 2018. This is the photo from Mayor Robert William Jr.'s last arrest in 2023. In last night's arrest, he was also charged with resisting arrest and possession of an open container of alcohol. The mayor's first DWI charge was on the night of his election day in 2018. He was re-elected in 2021. In a statement, the town of Sharpsburg provided a list of his charges but had no further comment.
A study put out this week suggests that we need to add a Category 6 to the levels that we count with hurricanes. Category 5s are already very rare, so why add this 6th? Is it necessary? Our meteorologists have a take on this. Up next, we're going in depth.
Plus, a pair of companies in Cary, both wanting something to celebrate. One gets a Grammy, one gets $1.5 billion. The big news for Epic Games and a local record label.
So maybe you've seen this headline this week, Category 6. Climate-boosted hurricanes push scientists to rethink classification. A study from the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences suggested adding a Category 6 for storms with winds over 192 miles per hour. See, right now, Category 5s are up to 157 miles per hour and more. The National Hurricane Center says a defining characteristic of a Cat 5 is, quote, most of the area will be uninhabitable for weeks or months. So what are you saying here? Are you saying a Category 6 is going to be worse than that, worse than total destruction? You might think this sounds terrifying, a whole new category of storms to worry about, but not exactly. In fact, only 5 storms in recorded history ever met this standard. And this proposed change isn't even happening anytime soon.
To be honest, I think scales are something we've done in the past, and they just haven't worked as effectively as we would hope. So we're not looking at any changes to the scale at this particular time. We're instead focused on communicating the risk and hazards that come with these particular storms.
So let's talk about that. In fact, one of our WRIO meteorologists is going to give their take on it in just a moment. But first, let's go a bit beyond the headline, into this study, into history, and into what meteorologists are talking about here. Let's go in depth. And let's start with this study that everybody's talking about. What is exactly the goal here? What are these scientists hoping to gain by adding a 6th hurricane category? They say the current one just isn't good enough. Quote, the open-endedness of the scale can lead to underestimation of risk. Global warming increases the likelihood that other storms reach such intense wind speeds. And it's true, storms are getting stronger and faster within the last 40 years. Just this past hurricane season, Hurricane Idalia went from tropical storm to a Cat 4 in just 3 days, making landfall as a Cat 3. Between 1980 and 2021, 197 storms reached Category 5 wind speeds. That's a 42-year range, and half of those storms happened in just the last 17 years. 5 of those storms would have qualified for this new made-up Category 6 spot. None of them hit the United States, we should say. One did hit Mexico. In 2015, Hurricane Patricia reached 215-mile-per-hour winds out in the ocean. By the time it made landfall, in the video you're seeing here, it was at Category 4 with 150-mile-per-hour winds. But here's the deal. Wind speeds, well, they don't really tell the whole story. The scientists in the study admit as much. Of the tropical storm-related deaths in the United States, 49% were caused by storm surge, not wind. Heavy rain accounted for 27%, and wind was directly responsible for 8% of deaths. Now, despite this, these hurricane categories that we hear so much about actually only take wind into account. It wasn't always this way, though. The measure of hurricane categories, known as the Saffir-Simpson scale, started in the early 1970s. See, back then, the scale did take other factors into account, like central pressure and storm surge. That changed in 2010. You see, predicting storm surge is frankly extremely difficult. Sea level height can drastically affect this, and every coastline is different. You know, one place could get 6 feet, another could get 11, and all from the same storm. And if that doesn't sound like a big disparity, well, consider this. This is 6 feet, just about my height. And this is 11 feet. Now, if you heard 6 feet on the news and you ended up with 11, that's a pretty big deal. That's why meteorologists use a set of other tools, like the SLOSH model. Yes, that is the actual name. It started in the 90s, using data to predict storm surge. In 2009, storm surge watches and warnings became a thing. In 2016, the NHC got a new tool, the Potential Storm Surge Flooding Map, which they still use today. And none of this is considered when determining the category strength of a storm. Now, as I mentioned, we would get a WRAL meteorologist to comment on this. Kat Campbell joining us now. Kat, hopefully we're on the right track with this segment, but it certainly seems like there are a whole lot of components to consider aside from just the category when it comes to wind speed.
Absolutely, Dan. And, you know, it's an interesting conversation to start, but the greater and the more pressing issue is certainly the lack of storm surge and flooding being considered when you decide the category of a hurricane in the first place. And if we're talking climate change, in the warmer climate, hurricanes aren't just getting stronger, but they're slowing down. And when they slow down, they dump more heavy rain, flooding becomes an even bigger concern, and water is the deadliest part of a hurricane, like you mentioned. So we need to prioritize the messaging here instead of just focusing on the wind speeds and this Category 6 issue.
You know, a lot of people listen to that number. That's the one they pay attention to when something's headed toward the coast. Do you think we need this Category 6 definition?
Well, you know, would you respond differently if I said a Category 5 is headed your way versus a Category 6? Probably not. Either way, you're concerned. And I don't think that we're going to need this Category 6 in the near future. And I don't think if you're watching right now that this is something you need to be panicked about. So let's put it this way. Of the five hurricanes that would have reached the hypothetical Category 6 status, none of them were in the Atlantic Basin. Only one was in the Eastern Pacific, and it was only a Category 6, theoretically, over water. The majority of these are typhoons in other parts of the world, and other parts of the world with typhoons, they don't even use our Category 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So what's the point of adding a Category 6 for only one hurricane in history that would have met this? I don't think it's a concern as of right now, but it could be in the future more.
Is this something that could happen? Could we start seeing Category 6 part of the typical storm cycle?
No. I don't think that this is going to happen anytime soon. And NOAA's deputy director backed that up. It's a government agency. It takes a lot of time for there to be change. It's worth revisiting this in the future, but not a priority right now for the organization.
You bet. Kat, thank you so much for clearing this up. That's why we bring in the experts. And I'll leave you with this. Just like Kat said, this isn't all about the category. It's more about the impact. Category 1, 2, and 3 hurricanes can still be catastrophic. Of course, many of you remember Hurricane Fran, a Cat 3 that made landfall in Cape Fear in 1996. 27 people died in that storm. It caused $5 billion in damage. And then there's Hurricane Florence in 2018. That made landfall at Wrightsville Beach. That was a Category 1 and killed 54 people, along with another $24 billion in damage. Storms, yes, with faster winds can be more deadly, but bigger, slower storms can be too. Either way, you shouldn't be concerned necessarily with that number, whether it's a Category 1, 2, 5, 6, 100. The real concern is just the word hurricane. When you hear that, being prepared, taking action, listening to our local meteorologists like Kat can make all of the difference. Let me know what you think about this story. How about climate change and its impact on our weather? Tell us what you're thinking about some of these crazy studies you see out there nowadays when it comes to our weather and how we should be responding. Become part of the conversation. Email me at dan@wral.com and we'll go in depth.
That is so interesting. I really found the piece about storm surge and the impact of storm surge on our communities to be fascinating.
And you just look, you know, we do put, I think the average viewer puts a lot of emphasis on that 1 through 5 scale. Yeah. But again, a 1 can be deadly. Mm-hmm. A 5 can be deadly. It's just part of living here in North Carolina.
So much else that goes into it. Yeah, exactly. Let's get back to Kat Campbell. Kat, what do we got going on for the next few days?
No hurricanes. That's the good news that I have for you. But, you know, when that time comes, next hurricane season, we're here to break down those impacts for you. That's our job, to go way more, you know, way deeper into that Category 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 to tell you about the impacts. Outside, though, you know, things are pretty quiet for us locally. There has been a lot of rain on the West Coast. I did want to point out the next system that's moving ashore is north of LA. In the area that saw the worst of the flooding before. Some good news there. And then our next system will arrive in the form of a cold front as we get into the weekend. But you have another day of dry weather tomorrow. A cold morning, partly cloudy skies return, and that's due to a south wind. So we begin to draw in more moisture as our high pressure moves offshore tomorrow. It has a clockwise flow around it, so our south wind begins to really ramp up as we get into Friday. Friday will be mostly cloudy, but even warmer, 64 the high. Saturday, we're up to 72, a southwest wind around 10 to 15 miles per hour. Here's the cold front. You can see a sliver of it on screen here. It moves closer to us late Saturday. So as we get into the evening and Saturday night, there could be some showers that try to push into the area. I think the bulk of that rain is going to come after midnight and into Sunday and Monday. As for how much rain we could see, anywhere from about half an inch to an inch and a quarter, these numbers could take up a little bit for us in the coming days, so I encourage you to check in for updates, especially as we get in the high resolution model data. Sunday is Super Bowl Sunday. A lot of people are going to be inside anyway. In Las Vegas, they're 3 hours ahead of us. Of course, it's covered there, but a lot of tailgating happening and pre-parties. Should be around 55 at kickoff, and then in Raleigh, 62 degrees for kickoff, and there could be some showers around. If you work perfectly and difficultly, you know, to try to wedge yourself in between the bands of rain, you may be able to grill out. So check in for updates. I encourage you as that high-resolution model data becomes available. In Goldsboro tonight, all is quiet. You can see it's still lit up there, looking nice. And our WRAL Weather Watcher photo is from Garner of the sunset. If you got a shot of the sunset, share those with us on WRAL.com/weatherwatchers. We are looking to share some of those on our late night news at 10 and 11 tonight. Our 7-day forecast has some more ups and downs ahead. Once we get past tonight's 29, we're going to be back in the 50s for lows over the weekend, 70s on Saturday, back in the 60s Sunday, and then toward the middle of next week is when the cooling begins. We're back down to 28 by Valentine's Day night into Thursday morning. And there's that pattern change that we have been hinting at now for weeks, more cooler than normal temperatures to end the month of February.
All right.
I'll spare the topic about, you know, bundling up on Wednesday night. Up next, video games and Grammys. Two Cary-based companies are having a big week, one taking home hardware, the other taking over $1 billion. Those stories after the break. An affordable housing project in Raleigh's Idlewild neighborhood is one step closer to reality. It was the first place where enslaved people in the city could own their homes.
Soon, a new generation of people will get that same opportunity. The city put $700,000 into the project. The Wake County could match that. They're going to take a vote on it next month. Once complete, there will be 18 cottage-style homes, 14 to own, 4 to rent. Some big news for the Cary-based company behind the video game Fortnite. Disney is investing $1.5 billion into Epic Games.
That's a lot of money. Disney CEO Bob Iger calls it the company's biggest bet ever in gaming. The two companies have collaborated before on games with Marvel and Star Wars characters. Now it appears they'll create even more games with even more Disney characters. A record label based in Cary took home a Grammy over the weekend. This Moment by Shock D won the award for Best Global Music Album. They're a fusion band with elements of Indian music, acoustic guitar, and jazz all wrapped into one. Their record label is Abstract Logics, which has operated in our area for decades.
Congratulations.
They're amazing.
I like having a Grammy back here in Cary area. Thanks for making WRAL News your choice for local TV.
Our next newscast is at 10 on Fox 50 and 11 on WRAL. Have a great night.
Watching WRAL News over the air channel 34 and Spectrum channel 1257.